Before we get started with this week's edition of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast, let me let you know that it's brought to you by Draft.com. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why you need to try Draft. No more getting crushed by the pros. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real live NBA, NFL, or for this podcast purpose, PGA Draft right now. Be done drafting in under 5 minutes and get paid out the day the tournament is done. The PGA version is great. You draft, you enjoy the 4 days, and you collect your money Sunday night. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join them whenever you want. All new players, this is the catch, all new players, when they make their first deposit, get entry into a real money draft by using the promo code SDSports. You got to use the promo code SDSports to get that free entry. That's right. Playing a real money draft for free by using the promo code SDSports. But it gets even better. For some crazy reason you do not like Draft, they are offering a $100 money-back guarantee. Just search Draft in your app store or go to Draft.com and come play for free right now. But you have to use the promo code SDSports. Void or prohibited, must be 18 or older. See website for details. Offer must be redeemed within 14 days. Now, welcome to this week's edition of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast.
Play. Yeah.
Kane's in the building, nigga.
Yeah. Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Okay. Anybody ever wonder when they would see the thunder? Just remember when you come to the show.
And welcome back, everybody, to the always pressing PGA DFS podcast. This week, previewing the Travelers Championship, we got a two-man show on tap for you. You can find my co-host, as always, on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how are we doing, man?
I'm hungover and tired. I feel like I played the U.S. Open.
And guys, that's coming from someone that's not drinking. He's talking about hungover from all the golf. So it was crazy. And I'm going to just preface this before we get going. We usually do a recap of the week before, and it's pretty brief. This one might be longer than normal because there's actually a lot of talking points here. Yeah. And so bear with us. And in the podcast notes, if you want to skip it, it'll tell you where to skip to get to the DFS. But I think we need to cover this because there was quite a bit to start with. And let's go with the important stuff, the kind of the better end of the spectrum. Brooks Koepka repeats. Seventh guy to ever repeat at the U.S. Open. First guy in almost 30 years. It was damn impressive. What's your thoughts first on just Koepka's performance as a whole?
Yeah, he was, he played really well after the first day. He got the bad weather draw, which is another topic, but he got the bad weather draw on Thursday morning, shot 75, and then got the good weather Friday afternoon, shot 66, and then was able to basically bring it home at even par the rest of the weekend, which was good enough to win the whole thing. It's if you watched it Sunday, it was really high-level golf from him. Even when he got in trouble, he still got up and down. He made a lot of long putts. You remember that one putt? I think you tweeted about it on Saturday. I think it was on Saturday. It was like a 60-footer for par.
61 feet. Absolutely incredible.
I mean, dude was just – he was on point, man. I mean, it's – those fairways were really wide, which I think helped him quite a bit, but he still didn't hit that many fairways. But he just – he's just a mentally tough dude, I think. I think he just – he's got a lot of confidence. He's got a lot of swag like DJ, and he's got a putter to back it up.
Yeah, his putting was ridiculous. I know you – you quote tweeted a deal where he basically had – or DJ basically had twice as many putts as Brooks. And that tells you everything you need to know when they finish a couple strokes apart like that, that the putting was just insane. And to the mentally tough aspect that you're mentioning, when you look at Brooks' last 11 majors, T18, T10, T5, T21, T13, T4, T11, he won the Open, T6, T13, the one that's last Open. Nothing worse than a T21 in his last 11 majors is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Especially when I think about it, when you have a guy who only has one other tour victory, like there's many weeks when we break down slates where we're like, no, Brooks is good, but I don't know if we want to play him this week. Open or a major, it's like, this guy's legit and this is what he's doing. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it's really, it's hard to wrap your mind around winning two U.S. Opens, especially obviously back-to-back U.S. Opens on two totally different golf courses.
Exactly.
Like, not even comparable. He wins one at, what, 16 under last year, and then this one at plus one this year. Just totally different golf, not even in the same ballpark.
Well, and that's, like, one of the better points about it is, you know, guys can go on Masters runs or whatever because you're playing the same course. A lot of these other majors, given the British is different, but, you know, you got the Players and all that other good stuff, and most of the time it's not the same course or a very similar course. The U.S. Open, they're making it a point to make life difficult for you. And the fact that you can, you know, when par is supposed to be a good score and he's out there just grinding and grinding and grinding, it is impressive. Some of the like wedge shots he'd hit in or little chip shots he'd hit in, I can't remember, it was 11 or 12 yesterday when he comes up short and we're thinking, okay, he's going to bogey this and Tommy's about to be tied for the lead. And he right. chips it up to within like 3 feet. And it's just like, what in the world is he doing out there? It's absolutely crazy. It was impressive. And I think I tweeted it yesterday and we were kind of talking about some other stuff. It's hard to portray things in a text or a tweet or whatever. But people need to realize just how impressive it is what Brooks Koepka pulled off. And you're not going to see it very often in your lifetime. It's absolutely crazy what he did. Let's skip to the DJ part. He, when it comes to ball striking, tee to green, all that good stuff, he was one of the best in the field. We mentioned already his putting let him down, and it could be a fact of how the playing conditions changed. We'll talk about that in a minute. But as a whole, what's your take on DJ? Because, you know, Brooks already has two titles. DJ has one, but DJ has been like top four or five many, many times, just grinding them out at the Opens.
Yeah. You know, everybody crowned Dustin Johnson after Friday's
round. I'm guilty.
I am too. You know, I was DMing with people saying, man, this is going to suck when DJ runs away with this. You know, but looking back on it, like, one of the things, and I actually talked to somebody about this too, was like he was gaining so many shots. Like round one, he gained 4 shots putting. Round two, he gained 3 shots putting. Now, he had the worst draw. He played PM, AM, and they ended up about 2 shots worse. And then he was, after Friday, still, what, like three or four shots clear of the field?
Yeah.
But it's just hard to sustain that. It's just, his ball striking just wasn't there. Now, then it finally came around a little bit better for rounds three and especially in round four. But the putting just, man, he just was on the struggle bus. But he was burning edges. You know, there's a lot that could have just fallen in. You were talking about that stat earlier. He had 14 more putts on the weekend than Brooks did and obviously lost by 2 shots. So, I mean, that stings. That's going to be one that's for him is going to be difficult to overcome, but I'm sure he will. He just dust it off and move on. But that would sting, man.
It's good he's got the week off because he can go sit on his boat and with his wife and party and relax for a little bit, just get away from everything. Because, yeah, like you said, that's going to be one where you really don't want to. He didn't want to drive to Connecticut and play this week because he's got to be pretty pissed off at the world. But, yeah, and he missed so many close putts, and that could be to the playing conditions or whatever. But Vegas and the line makers already love him. He's the favorite at the British. So people aren't too concerned about the way things turned out, and they shouldn't be. He still is the number one player in the world for a reason. So, yeah. And he showed it. He played – so, like, what he did to be 4 under after 2 rounds in those conditions and those wins was really, really something else.
I agree. Let's
talk about the overall conditions because, you know, the first 2 days it played like everything we could dream of for U.S. Open. It was – everything was there. The course was playing – you know, it was playing tough, but it was in good conditions and so on and so forth. And then Saturday happens. And it's one thing we have to clarify. This wasn't the USGA's fault because you can't – you know, the winds just got out of control. And if the wind stayed in the kind of medium to high where they thought it would be – you would think the course stays okay. Where it is the USGA's fault is a couple pin placements, and that's been well talked about in many, many places by many, many experts. What were your overall thoughts on the course setup and kind of how it ran for the week?
Yeah, I mean, Thursday, Friday, the weather was a huge factor. Obviously, winds pretty much all day Thursday. They didn't really let up. But the major factor with me, even looking at the weather angle, was Friday where – it was windier in the morning, and then it just laid down Friday afternoon. And that's when you saw really the best scoring conditions of the week, because it had rained earlier that morning. And then, so those guys got a lot, a big time advantage. I think it ended up being, like I said, two shots on the AM PM wave versus the PM AM wave. So that's a huge factor. And that's something that, you know, we talk about all the time, especially in weeks leading up. And there's always a debate about it. And it's difficult, obviously, to predict the weather. But it's never a bad idea, in my opinion, to hedge yourself with the weather. I mean, obviously, forecasts change, things change. But and then and my favorites, obviously, too, when people sit back on Thursday and say, oh, the weather doesn't matter. It didn't matter. Everybody's getting the same plane. That was never the point. The point was always Friday. So that played out, and I actually stacked that wave that got the two-shot advantage, got 6-6 through. And as far as Saturday, man, I mean, I just, you know, the same type of thing happened the last time they were at Shinnecock on one hole, and it was playing very unfair. I mean, the pin on 15 Saturday was fucking ridiculous, because you watched it. You saw guys hitting it 1-2 feet by, which is pretty natural for a tour player. They're always hitting it 1-3 feet by because they're playing, you know, they're hitting it very, very similar every time they hit it. And, you know, Piercy's goes off the green. There was another one that went, you know, 15, 20 feet by. I mean, there was other pins that were just as bad. The greens looked awful. They just dropped the ball on that, dude. I mean, and I think they overcompensated on Sunday. But every pin was in the fucking middle. And that's one thing that allowed Tommy Fleetwood to make that huge comeback, which is fine. I mean, it wasn't. But I don't understand how – like, I see this all the time. Well, not all the time, but when this type of thing happens, it's always on Saturday. Like, they just lose it on Saturday and then, you know, overcompensate on Sunday. So, it's just – and one other thing about, you know, players, you know, I've seen people getting on players about bitching about, you know, how bad it was. It was borderline unfair. I'll give them that. The other thing with these players is that you have to realize, like, they're not used to making bogeys. And so it's difficult to change your mindset into, it's okay if I make a bogey here, just avoid the double. It's okay if I make a par here, just avoid the big number. It's because, you know, I play DFS all the time, and this is a really bad analogy, but it was difficult for me to get okay with guys just making pars this past week when par was a good score, and that was totally fine. So I can only imagine how difficult it is for them actually on the fucking golf course, you know. So, yeah, that's my take on the deal there.
I agree with pretty much all that. It was – the part that was unfair is that it played as two completely different golf courses. And that's the part – that's the part I hate about it. It's like, okay, if it was crappy for everybody, well – then there it was. And that's where I could see guys complaining. And the guys that complained, obviously, were the guys in the back end, because you'd watch guys, like you said, hit beautiful golf shots, either out of the sand, from around the green, heck, from 150 yards out, just beautiful shots that on a regular course, like we'll see this week, it'll be a dart and they'll go boom, boom, and they'll have a beautiful birdie putt.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it had to catch everything like that, but man, when you hit a shot and literally take one bounce or two bounces, and now it's 50 yards off the green.
Right.
That is just asinine. Yeah. Like, you can make a course challenging, but you can still reward a golfer for a good golf shot.
Sure.
And that's where it got frustrating for me to watch. I enjoyed just watching the carnage, because after a while you just accept it. Like, okay, how's this one going to go completely wrong? And that was the only way I could enjoy it. I watched every second of it, and that's what it was. But I don't blame these guys at all. I was actually impressed with you know, Zach Johnson, people say, is a crybaby. Maybe he took it too far. But even Ian Poulter, he said it in a very good way. And Ian Poulter, you can love him or hate him, he at least did it properly. And there's many others. And the other one that stood out to me that really impressed me, because I have a lot of people that I know personally that can't stand Justin Thomas. They think he's a cocky, arrogant young guy. And I like a lot of that about him. And he answered that as professionally about when they asked him about the conditions of the course that anybody I've heard. He sounded like, you know what, it sucked, but this is what it is, blah, blah, blah. I was impressed, thoroughly impressed with a guy we've seen blow up on golf courses and kick people out for yelling out of a bunker shot and stuff like that. He handled that so well, but it was just tough to see guys that shouldn't get penalized. And then the other thing that I think is people need to just stop talking about now is, yes, Finau and Berger shouldn't have been there. Sure, if the course played the same. But, hey, that's not their fault. They went out there and they beat up a course that they were able to beat up.
There's another way to look at that, though, too. You know, with those two in particular, you know, there was three total rounds on Saturday that were under par. And the next best one was two under, which was Kiradek. You know, but we all know how good he is at just everything. So those two shoot four under. And, you know, nobody else was out there shooting four under. So, you know, they shot four under. They were in the clubhouse as the leaders were going out, sitting back, you know, drinking a beer. And I know they had fully did not expect to be the last group out. But I thought that they handled it well. I thought those two handled it well. I really expected like a Finau 78 and a Berger 80. But that's something else, man. Misses the cut, defending champion, and comes back and golf.
Yeah, golf is crazy like that. let's talk about something crazy. Our boy Lefty Phil Mickelson pulled the ultimate putt-putt golf, and there is every side of the spectrum's argument I've heard already. It's crazy, but I'm not even going to describe what happened, because if you're listening to this, you obviously know what happened. But what's your thoughts on what Phil did, Jesse?
It was a here's my issue with Phil, and it's not what he did, because we've all been there on the golf course, right? We've all been pissed off. I've thrown golf clubs. I have cussed my way from the tee to the green. I've done things that I shouldn't have on a golf course. But when you come out and your ego is so fucking big that you can't just say, I messed up and I'm sorry, that's where I get mad about it. So he comes out and he says, I was just taking advantage of the rules. Like, that's Bush League, dude. Like, you're a professional golfer. You're a multimillionaire. And people expect you to act in a different way. I know we all have flaws. Like I said, we all mess up. I'm not mad about, you know, him doing that. But if that's his mindset of basically, I'm able to take advantage of the rules because I'm smarter than everybody else, I don't like that at all.
No, there you go. You said it, because I've heard so many different angles. I'm not mad about what he did. We all make mistakes. We've all done dumb stuff, like you said. I know a guy I play with on the regular has an extra club in his bag to break. That's just what some people have, different quirks when they play golf, right or wrong. That's what they do. It was his attitude and lack of remorse for what took place. Like, he's just like, yep, whatever, this, that, and the other. And then, you know, what I think made it worse was the next day when he makes the putt on 13, he celebrates like he won a tournament. And that was just like, dude, what are you doing, man? What are you doing?
Yeah.
So that was the frustrating part. What he did, sure, yes, very wrong. But, hey, the USGA decided they didn't want to, you know, DQ him, which they had all the right to do. But they didn't, so they let him play. And he's one of the few guys that shot under par on Sunday. So he's my only guy that shot under par, let's put it that way. But
It's just annoying that, like, your ego is that massive that you can't just say, hey, guys, I effed up, man. I'm sorry, you know.
Yeah, that was the problem. He basically sits there in the post-game interview or post-round interview with his, like, middle finger in the air to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, like, his little smart-ass smirk on his face. Like, I don't know. I lost a lot for Phil that day. I've never been a huge Phil fan. I've been gravitating a little bit towards him this year because he's playing well, and I like to watch him because he hits really good golf shots. But the reason I've never liked him is because he thinks he's smarter than everybody else. Yep. And I don't like that. Yep.
Yeah, no, that was a big step back in the Phil Resurrection project that we've talked about many times on this show. So it sucks, but I'm not mad at the act. I'm more mad about the result, I should say, of how it all came to be. But last thing I want to mention here is, like a typical U.S. Open, a lot of the big names did not make it through to the weekend. Any thoughts on anyone in particular, or just kind of business as usual?
No, I mean, it was, you know, Jordan Spieth. Did you see Jordan on Friday? Did you watch it?
Not so much Friday. I saw a lot of Thursday, and that still wasn't pretty either.
Well, so he finished on his backside. He shot 36 with three bogeys, a double, and four birdies. He went four birdies in a row, and then bogey to finish to miss the cut. And he had like a – how long was that putt? No, he had a 12-footer, base 10-footer, 10-footer to make the cut and missed it. So, I mean, that was kind of surprising, not really. Rory just played awful on Thursday. 80-70 was trash. One thing to talk about is Tiger Woods missed the cut, and he's now out of exemptions. So – how weird would it be to be in like a sectional qualifier and be like, oh, yeah, you're paired with Tiger Woods today?
Now, obviously, there's a great chance he's going to get an exemption. Or he's out of exemption. Okay, now I know what you're saying. I got you. Well, they can still make random.
10 years is up since the last time he won. So now he has to qualify.
Or they can give him a random invite like they did a couple guys, but because you know they're going to want him there. But yes, I get what you're saying. It is quite bizarre to walk up to a tee box and go, oh, crap. It's Tiger. that would be something else. But and you mentioned that he just doesn't look good, and he doesn't fit these courses anymore. I don't think the way he plays, and he's still one of the top five favorites for the British Open. It's really weird to people are still gravitating towards him, and I'm not really seeing it. Are you seeing something we're all missing?
No, I don't see it at all. I think he's still working, and I think he'll continue to be a work in progress, but minus two shots gained putting on Thursday. And that's usually his bread and butter. I mean, usually he's out there draining putts. He fixed it a little bit on Friday, but just wasn't good everywhere else. So I don't know, man, I'm still on wait and see mode with Tiger.
Yeah, that's how I've been every week, because people probably laugh when they go, when you guys ask for the fades of the week, and I'm always like, Tiger, because I just don't see it. Unless it's a super small course and he can kind of, mistakes don't hurt him, he can play. But if there's anywhere there's going to be mistakes that are going to hurt this guy, he's in trouble. And he just doesn't have it right now.
Right.
So, yeah, good point bringing up Tiger. It'll be pretty interesting. But all in all, pretty solid tournament. Top 10, Brooks Koepka, Tommy Fleetwood, Dustin Johnson, Patty Reed, who was pretty impressive, really under, not talked about enough, I don't think, but he played as well. We got Finau, Xander, Tyrrell Hatton came back to earth for us. Henrik Stenson, Berger, Webb, Justin Rose, that's your top 10, who all have exemptions into next year's U.S. Open. Some already had other exemptions, of course, but those 10 are automatically in. Before we get to the Travelers, Jesse, give us kind of a brief cliff notes of your Captain Hindsight article this week for FanShare.
Yeah, it was another chalky week, dude. Like the top six in points, the average ownership was 17%, with the only guy being below 10%, Patrick Reed, and he was at 9%. So just super chalky. One thing I do want to shout out at Daily Sports Geek. He is one of the guys who originally kind of turned me on to leaving money on the table several years back, and he preached it. He shared, as fate would have it, he shared the Millie with somebody else, so he took home $575,000. But they both had the same lineup, which is one, like I said, so it's kind of ironic, but he's one of the guys that has just been around Twitter and DFS for a long time. Brooks, Henrik, Reed, Fleetwood, Casey, Finau was the team, and they used just under $50,000 at $49,900. Average ownership on that team was 17%.
Wow.
The only guy being under Patrick Reed, I mean, Tommy Fleetwood, 26%, Paul Casey, 21%, Finau, 13%, Henrik and Brooks, right around 17-18%. I mean – That is crazy high ownership for a Millie winner, and to only be duped really one time. You know what I mean? Like one time, that's it. And looking back, I mean, those are such obvious plays now.
Oh, yeah. No, I had all of them scattered around a few lineups, but none of them together. I had three of those as my core, the KC, Stenson. Or no, I just those two were there because Rose was my third, and he shit the bed on the weekend.
He was all weekend. But, yeah, the only guy I didn't have was Stenson. He was tilting me all weekend because I talked about him last week. I was like, I don't like his putter. Didn't matter.
Yeah, because him and Rose, I kept watching them. Okay, these guys are – the way they play Thursday, Friday, I'm like, sweet, we got a shot here. And then just didn't come to be.
Rose looked good, dude, and he just
– he couldn't putt at all because he was hitting shots. His approach to the green was flawless almost, but he could not putt.
On Saturday, he missed the first – he hit one of
he couldn't
12 greens. I mean, he was bad, but he was still getting up and down for par. And then I guess it's difficult to sustain that. I don't know.
Yeah, true. Yeah, no, it was – an interesting set of circumstances, to say the least.
We take this brief break in the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast to talk to you about RotoWear, one of the greatest shirts in fantasy sports. They have DFS shirts, fantasy season long, all kinds of great shirts. They're the best quality shirts in the industry. No other brand can compete with RotoWear in terms of quality, premium blend fabric, super soft, comfortable, athletic fit shirts, specialized printing process, design as part of the shirt, literally dyed, bleached into the fabric, no thick ink. It's ridiculous the amount of options you can find, over 30 different designs. Fantasy football, baseball, hockey, basketball, DFS, they keep coming out with more and more and more stuff. Men's, women's, kids, you name it, they've got it. There's lots of buzz kicking up in the fantasy industry about it. People are wearing these shirts. They're representing the shirts. They are great quality shirts. And you can have one too. You can have more than one, as many as you want. Just use the promo code DEGENS, 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 for 20% off your order. Go to rotowear.com. Or go to @RotoWear on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Check out what they have. They're giving away free shirts all the time on Twitter. But when you go to purchase, use the code DEGENS, DEGENS, for 20% off your order. Now back to the Always Pressing PGA TFS podcast.
Let's get into the Travelers Championship as the Open is past us now, and we got the British in a few weeks in late July. So let's get into the Travelers. Jesse, give us some past event history of the Travelers.
Yeah, so we're up in Connecticut. This tournament was once called the Insurance City Open, also the Greater Hartford Open. But basically the last few winners, Jordan Spieth, this is where he won in a playoff over Daniel Berger last year with the chip in out of the bunker. Still replayed every week for some reason on PGA Tour. The year before that, Russell Knox, one shot over Jerry Kelly in 2016. Bubba Watson was the 2015 champion over Paul Casey. Streelman, one shot winner over KJ Choi and Sergio Garcia in 2014. Other winners, Mark Leishman, Bubba's won twice. Stuart Sink's a past winner here. But, scores are pretty average, too, as far as in the mid-teens under par. So 12 under, 14, 16, 15 the last 4 years. So back to regularly scheduled programming this week.
Yep, we will get birdies, which will be good to see. Yes. Let's talk about a little course preview of TPC River Highlands. You mentioned it's in Connecticut, up in Cromwell, Connecticut, outside of it was 35th year as a PGA Tour venue. It's a Pete Dye redesign in 1982, so we'll get another Pete Dye course. We know how that operates then. They're working a lot of left to rights, right to lefts, a lot of visual things to kind of keep your mind on edge. There's a lot of bunkers in play, some in the fairway, a lot around the greens, not a lot of room to, if you miss around the greens, you're going to be in trouble. But the fairways are pretty forgiving for the most part. Lots of trees. There's some fescue on the outside, some bluegrass fescue rough, but it's not super crazy, as they say. Numerous lakes and ponds on the course, but only 5 holes. Do these water hazards come into play? The greens are a combo of poa and bent grass, so nothing too crazy. They are elevated greens. There's a par 70, 6,841-yard course, 2 par 5s, 4 par 3s, and the rest are par 4s. The par 4s range from 400 to 481 yards. So some very gettable, some very long. The 481-yard par 4 was the toughest hole on the course last year. Only 45 birdies and 118 bogeys or worse took place at that hole. But basically, bombers, you don't have to be a bomber here because you want to go about 280-ish off the tee, give or take, and then you've got a 150 shot in is your kind of main approach on most of these holes, give or take. Bubba did win it, and he was able to bomb it out, and he'd have a bunch of like 120-yard wedge shots in. But more often than not, like you said, Spieth won last year. Jim Furyk has the record here with a 58, so obviously that tells you the kind of player that can be successful here. A few years ago, as an amateur, Patrick Cantlay shot a 60. So there's definitely a lot of strokes to be made out here and a lot of low scores that can take place. Just a typical Pete Dye type deal where don't overthink it. Make your shots to certain spots, and the approach in is what you're looking for. So should be a fun one at TPC River Highlands. What are some of the key stats you're looking for, Jesse?
Greens and regulation. Pretty much keep and reg weak. Accuracy, some accuracy stats, but mostly that, and then a little bit of scrambling and birdie or better.
Yep, DK scoring. Around the green scrambling, like you said, is big. And then that approach shot in, everything I was reading, about 130 to 160-ish, that's where you're really going to want your wheelhouse. So just good ball striking, should do very well this week. Before we get into the DraftKings analysis, let me give you a little bit of fan sharing information. Last year at the Travelers, your top 10 tagged golfers going into the week, Paul Casey was one, Jordan Spieth two, Bubba three, Brendan Steele was fourth, Justin Thomas, Kyle Stanley, Tony Finau, Webb Simpson, Mark Leishman, and Charlie Hoffman led the way in your tags. When we get into some other information, though, the top DraftKings scorers last year at the Travelers that are in the field this year, Jordan Spieth, obviously, as he won. But right behind him, you had Charlie Hoffman, 106.5 DraftKings points, Danny Lee with a big 103, Berger, Paul Casey, Patty Reed, Lahiri had 85 DraftKings points. Brendan Steele has played really well at this course. CT Pan, another guy, and Kevin Streelman. So as you can tell, you know, Streelman, Pan, Steele, Lahiri, Lee, at least six to seven of those guys aren't super big names. So a lot of different guys can make their mark here. And then current form coming into this from the last three events that are in this field, average DraftKings points in the last 3 weeks, or their last three events, I should say. Yeah, Kopka leading the way, obviously winning the U.S. Open. J.B. Holmes is second in this field in his last three events, DK scoring. Yeah, let that one sink in for a minute. Rory Sabatini is third because Andrew Putnam withdrew already. Justin Thomas, J.T. Poston is fifth. Mark Leishman, Patty Reed, Annibon Lahiri again, and then DeChambeau. So that is quite a list of names that – this is why I like reading this every week because every now and then you get a list like that, which lets you know there's some guys with recent form that might stand out and surprise you a little bit, a lot more than one would think. If you want to play Billy Ho, Emiliano Grillo, Webb Simpson, Brooks Koepka, and Jason Day. So a little more friendly territory there. But all in all, it's a pretty wide-open tournament, as you can tell by a lot of those names. Let's get into the DraftKings, Jesse. Let's start out with the 10K and above. You got Justin Thomas leading the way, Brooks Koepka second, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, and Patty Reed makes his way into the 10K range. What are you liking up top?
The two plays for me are going to be Koepka and JT, and that's only because I think they will be lower owned, and they obviously have the ability to win. So if you're wanting to play it that way, otherwise I don't know that I'll play anybody above 10K this week. This is a pretty good field. Like, looking through the names here, there's a lot of names in this field. And so trying to grab as many names as possible is going to be my key. But Brooks obviously coming off the win. JT is interesting. He's got his history here the last 4 years is miscut third, miscut 30th. So if you believe in patterns, he should make the cut here this year. So he's interesting because, you know, for the most part, people don't – like, they tend to avoid the highest-priced guy. And the fact that he's above Brooks this week is pretty interesting because, obviously, Brooks is just won the U.S. Open.
Yeah, only the biggest national tournament we have.
He just dusted Justin Thomas last week. So, I mean, Justin didn't play terrible, but
– No, he didn't. He finished – I thought he was better in T25. I guess that's what he got.
T25 last week, though, looked like
– it's really good.
Because you were like plus what? What do you finish?
I already got rid of the page, but he had to have been, what, 13 or 14 at least?
12.
Okay, that's close, yeah.
Yeah, 12 over 25 last week, which let me look at 12 and you're like, what the hell? But it's not terrible.
Not in that carnage.
I mean, in Justin Thomas's last few starts, that's his worst start since September.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Damn good. No, he's, again, just like we say about Dustin Johnson a lot, Justin Thomas was the top player in the world for a while, and I haven't looked at any of the numbers, but hey, with DJ taking the week off, a JT win maybe puts him back. I don't know. I haven't looked at it all, but it's only been a couple weeks, so you imagine the gap's not that big. So
he should have plenty of world rankings points.
Yeah, there's 50 people, around 50 people that played last week here, which is surprising. And I believe I read somewhere like 15 or 16 of the top 30 in the world are playing here, which tells you a lot. For me, in the 10K and above, again, like you, I like to stay out of this range, especially this week. There's a ton that I like in the 8s and the 9s to kind of make a little core around. I don't hate your Thomas and Koepka points at all, especially Brooks, because I think it'll be that whole theory, back-to-back weeks theory, where you could probably get them super low owned, and he's played well here when he's played his last time here, at least T9. But the guy I'm looking at is Patty Reed. This is a guy that I said it when we talked about the top 10. He's just playing really, really good golf. Before the U.S. Open, a T29, a T41, but prior to that, 8th, a 1st, he's just been knocking on the door. His last two years here, T5, T11, and then miscut, T18. So he's found it here the last two go-rounds. I just really like the way he's playing golf right now. Maybe he's, you know, you never know with these guys that played last week. They could be burned out. You know, you never know. But I think Patty Reed at 10K is a price that I can definitely get behind. If I go up here, I'm not planning on it because when we get to the 6K range, it's one of the worst 6Ks I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
But Patty Reed at 10K is definitely someone I can get behind. We get to the 9K. We got six guys: Jason Day, Paul Casey, Bryson DeChambeau, who's creeped all the way up to 9,500, and rightfully so. Mark Leishman, Webb Simpson, and Ryan Moore. Who are you liking in the 9Ks, Jesse?
So I've got all these guys checked. I'm with you.
It's tough.
This is my range here, and you can't fit them all in, obviously. I think Jason Day is an interesting play because of ownership. Like, obviously, he's got the ability to win. Miscut 18th, 27th in his last three attempts here. Miscut was last year. 18th was in 2014. So, and coming off the miscut, his big issue last week was not being able to hit greens, and the putter was terrible in round one, which is not like him this year. So it'll be interesting to see if he can right that ship. He'll be like another guy that's an ownership play for me. A couple of guys who I really do like, obviously, Paul Casey. I don't really need to talk about why. I'm going to get back on Bryson this week because I know if I don't, he's probably going to perform very well. That was super heavy, Bryson. He didn't play good at all the weekend last week, and he finished 25th.
Real quick on Bryson, though. Yeah. When we were texting Thursday, you were pissed. And you got to give that boy credit. He shot one under on Friday.
Yeah. He battled.
Especially, I was worried about him. When he talked a lot of trash after Thursday about the course, he's such a mental guy at times, I thought he was done.
Yeah, I mean, he called the course a circus or whatever, clown show or whatever.
Clown show.
But he mentally stayed in it, and he shot one under, and actually six over on in round one was pretty average. So, yep. I mean, in the grand scheme, you know. But either way, I'm back on Bryson. I think Leishman's playable, Webb's playable, Ryan Moore's interesting. I don't know about paying $9,000 for Ryan Moore, but that could be another ownership play there. I think Webb will be semi-popular, so will Leishman. But my two main here will be Paul Casey and Bryson. It's probably where I'll start my team most likely.
Well, we got a lot in common. This is good. I agree that we'll see. But Jason Day, and the same goes for Spieth, who I never play, but defending champion. If those guys are ever going to get things right, this is the kind of course to help them a lot. So I usually never recommend them, and I'm not recommending them this week because I'm not playing them. That's all I recommend. But they are definitely more in play this week than they've been in recent weeks. I do love Paul Casey. Absolutely love him. I was kind of frustrated with him over the weekend at the Open, but then you got to, like you said, you got to look back and he still finished T16 at just a bloodbath. And yeah. He's Mr. T20 over and over again. He's a T5 and a second two of the last 3 years here. He's been damn good at $9,600. So I love Paul Casey. And then Bryson, big fan of this week. I think the mental way he approaches a golf course fits a Pete Dye to a T. Like that's what this is his type of layout. He's only played it twice. He's made two cuts. He's improved 21 positions from his first year to his second. And the way he's playing right now in current form, I love him. I think he's a great, great play this week. Starting out with one of those two or both, I think is a great way to go. Leishman, I've already heard a lot of talk about him. Leishman and Simpson, they're both just like Jason Day, really good Pete Dye players. So I have no problem with either one. Leishman is a defending champion. He's made 7 of 7 cuts. Simpson's made 8 of 8. So both very quality plays. I'll be starting with Casey and DeChambeau, but you know we always talk about check fan share, check the ownerships, and maybe they'll be good pivots. I think Ryan Moore, like you said, is the greatest pivot in this group because you've heard how we both talked about everybody above him, and we won't be the only ones to talk like that about everybody above him. Right. So he's going to get overlooked in this field, and he's coming in great form as well, like phenomenal form. He's played really good at this course. He plays really well at Pete Dye's. So a 9K price for a guy that can contend and compete, I don't hate it at all. He's going to go so overlooked. So I'm with you. I'm going Casey and DeChambeau as my main two in this realm. But if you're making a lot of lineups, literally, you can mix and match this whole realm here. I think you'll be just fine. These guys could easily top 10, if not win the tournament. So I like this 9K range quite a bit. Let's drop into the 8Ks where we have about 8 guys to choose from. We got Berger, the second place last year, Bubba Watson, Hoffman, Shoffley, Billy Ho, Cantlay, Harmon, ZJ, Sneds, Holmes, and Russell Knox. Who you liking in the 8Ks?
I'm not a huge fan of this region. There's a lot of names here, obviously. Berger, I think, will be more popular than he necessarily should be. Well, I take that back. He's second and fifth the last 2 years here. But my thing with Berger is just he played so well one round last week, and he finished sixth. I think that'll bump his ownership up. He got a lot of TV time on Sunday, too. I do like Bubba at 8,800, obviously two-time winner here. Missed the cut last year and missed the cut last week, but I don't really put any stock in that. He's a different Bubba this year besides the fact that he still can't play U.S. Opens, and that's fine. Xander is interesting to me at 8,600. Finished 14th here last year. Not really what you would consider like a Pete Dye type of dude, but finished sixth last week at the U.S. Open. He's in okay form, but he's interesting at 8,600. I think Zach Johnson's playable at 8,200. I think probably Cantlay and Harmon will be a little bit more popular, but I don't know. I don't know how much of these guys I'll have.
Yeah, it's an interesting range. Definitely ownership here. Because you mentioned Cantlay and Harmon. Cantlay is going to be the chalk of the chalk, I think, at $8,400. Right. I think he's going to be so – and I love playing him, but I'm not going to play him at that chalk. I'd rather go to a Xander at $8,600, who T14 last year, T6 at the Open. And this is kind of the time of year last year where he started making that run to really consistent golf. So I wouldn't be shocked if he puts another good weekend together here. Bubba Watson I do like quite a bit here, being the new Bubba that we've seen. And like you said, he doesn't know how to play U.S. Opens. He just can't play them. So I don't – last week, I just lock away and throw away. Like, that's just gone.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Pete Dye's, way he played a course like Riviera, which is a shot maker's course, Bubba Watson fits this really well. He's won it twice. He's either going to miss the cut or he's going to give you a top 20, top 25 performance at $8,800. So I do like some Bubba. I mentioned Xander. If one of those guys is heavy on, you could look at a Charlie Hoffman, who has played really well here, and he played well at the Open this past week. After that, though, you drop down to guys like ZJ, who I like most weeks just because he's consistent. He can contend, but more often than not, you're playing him to make cuts and get you like a top 20, top 25. So I don't mind him, especially in cash games. And then Snedeker. I've been off of him all year. This is a course he plays really, really well. Four top 20s here, and he's made 3 straight cuts with a T6 involved there. I think things are starting to finally turn for Brandt. The way he's striking the golf ball, his work around the greens getting a little better. So at $8,100, I think this is a guy that you can pivot off of an $8,300 Harmon or maybe some of the guys farther down below. He makes for a nice little middle piece here. So I don't mind Sneds at $8,100. Again, a guy I rarely ever play. So he's on the radar this week for sure. Let's drop down to the 7K range where we have about 70 golfers. Jesse, give us some that you like down here.
Do you want to start? You start.
Okay, I'll start. I'll start. Keegan Bradley at 79. Absolutely love him. He had a miscut last week, but hey, you can take it as far as you want to take it, or you could do whatever you want with the Open. But the way he came playing into that was outstanding. We talked about a T8 here last year. He's made all seven cuts. He's played this tournament. I think at 79, he's a really, really solid play here. Patrick Rogers coming in outstanding form. He's played well at Pete Dye courses. $7,800 could be a lower owned target. If some people are worried about miscuts, I'm going right back to the Emmanuel Grillo realm at $7,700. Another guy that was playing amazing before last weekend, so we'll jump back on that train. Kyle Stanley's worth a look. If Grillo is chalky, Stanley, when it comes to a ball striking course, could play really well here. Without taking everybody from you, CT Pan, we mentioned last year T8 here. DraftKings points-wise was outstanding. And he's coming in with a T18, T20, T32 in his last three events. He's made five straight cuts. So he could be a sneakier play at 7,600. If you're thinking course horses, Brandon Steele crushes this course, absolutely loves this course. And he's 7,600 as well. So those are two I really like there. Who do you like 7,600 and above, or 7,500 and above? And then we'll go to the bottom half.
Sure. I'm on a lot of the same guys you are. I don't know how much Keegan and List I'll have. I mean, I think they're good plays, but for like ownership wise, I might be fading those. I think Grillo is underpriced at 77. I mean, he was 71 last week, and we're only bumping him up 600. I mean, obviously this field's good, but it's not as good as the U.S. Open, so that's weird to me. So he might be super chalk, but I still like him a lot, and he might be some chalk I'm willing to eat there. Stanley, I'm on him. CT Payne, I was going to mention him as well. I mean, obviously the eighth last year, and then he's playing better this year. He's made four straight cuts on tour, two straight top 20s. So he's super interesting to me at 7,600. And then Henley's another guy who I would consider as a kind of a pivot off the rest of these guys. Because he did flash some form last week. He finished 11th here in 2016. We've been waiting on Henley to kind of turn it around. He's just been sketchy, making cuts so often, but not really good finishes. And he flashed some form. I mean, he was in the lead for a little while last week. And then Watney at 75. Or you want me to stay above 75?
No, you can go 75. That's fine.
All right, 75, Watney and Siwoo Kim. Siwoo finished second at the Heritage, which is another Pete Dye design. So, but I've already seen him mentioned a couple times, so I don't know how popular he'll be either, but I do like him a lot at 75. He's played really well besides that miscut at the U.S. Open. You know, he hadn't missed a cut since mid-March. So I'm not putting any stock in any miscuts at the U.S. Open. I mean, he missed it on the number two. He shot 9 over for the week. It's not terrible.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. Below the 7,500 range, a couple guys I'm looking at is Jim Furyk. We kind of joked about him last week, and he actually played pretty well until the weekend. He got through at his price tag. I bet you I don't even know what his ownership was. Couldn't have been high. And we mentioned he's got the course record here. Back-to-back made cuts here. $7,300 could be another interesting play. Chetson Hadley at $7,300. I don't understand that price tag. Sure, he missed a cut his last time out, but prior to that was playing some of the best golf on tour, especially when it comes to, you know, just striking the ball, hitting your irons. Chesson Hadley is outstanding. So I love him at $7,300. A good pivot. We mentioned him in the fan share preview. Lahiri, $7,300 as well. He could be a phenomenal pivot if you need to, but I'd prefer Hadley if I had to pick one of the two. Other than that, you know, Keith Mitchell's always an intriguing look. First time playing here, but brings that game that we like. Stewie Sink is a guy I always like to play at $7,100. In that lower 7-6K range. So he's a guy I don't mind at 7,100. Then maybe a Kokrak or a Wesley Bryan. I'm not too happy. I really don't want to go below Sink at all this week, but who are you liking in 7,400 and below?
Yeah, the a couple, like you said, Chesson Hadley, it's just, I guess that's a course history price because I was, when I saw his name down here, I was like, what the, you know, I mean, he's been inconsistently pretty much right around $75,000 to $8,000 When he's at 8,500 at the Texas Open, so 8,300 in Fort Worth, 79th at Memorial, which is arguably a better field. So that's a really weird price. I'm guessing just a course history price, but I would be willing to take some chances at 7,300, and I'm sure a lot of other people will be. So it'll be interesting to see his ownership. Retief Goosen's another guy who's popping on my model for some reason, 7,300. Four straight made cuts here, and then coming off the sixth at the St. Jude. Miscut, Wells Fargo, 20th. So he's kind of been sketchy, but hit a lot of greens at the St. Jude and drove it really well, and short game was working. So it'd be interesting to see if he's motivated coming off Shinnecock, where they didn't give him an invite and he was defending champ. So that will be an interesting deal for me. Rory Sabatini at 7,200. You mentioned him earlier. Top 10 in points, DraftKings. Corey Connors at 7,000. And Tyler Duncan, I was looking at him a little bit last week just for the kind of round-by-round deal because he had hit a bunch of greens. He hit 65% of his greens last week and shot 81 on Sunday – or no, Saturday, sorry. But bounced back with a solid 72 on Sunday. So if the putter gets going for Tyler, he could – I could see him, you know, get inside the top 20 or something like that, and that would most definitely pay off his price.
Yeah, some of those plays that Duncan play, the Goosen, those will be some nice low ownership angles there you can definitely target because most won't be on them at all. And that on the Goosen note, I think it's absolute garbage. They didn't let him come back after the defending champion backer. That is horseshit. Let's get to the 6K range. Like I said earlier, absolutely disgusting. I'll just give you a couple that I'm looking at. Vaughn Taylor is one that I've mentioned the last couple of weeks just because he has poked some probs around, and he's actually has a T18 and T20 last two tournaments, and here he's made three straight cuts here. He's made 11 to 13 cuts with a top 10 involved. So $6,900, I don't love anybody on here, but I don't hate Vaughn Taylor. Bryce Garnett and Pete Malnati are a couple of guys I'd look at, but really don't go down here if you don't have to. What do you like in the 6Ks?
Yeah, I'll second that motion. I'm going to stay away from this as much as possible. I'll give you one dart. And I guess it's just because he's played really one recent tournament where there's stats. It's Nick Hardy. He played on a web.com event last week or the 10th, so the weekend before last. He had a bunch of greens in regulation, finished 33rd. Hit a lot of fairways, scrambled really well. So if you're down here, 6,600, there's your dart. I mean, James Hahn is 6,700. Probably not, you could do a whole hell of a lot worse. Tom Hoagie's been playing all right. There's some names down here, but I'm with you, man. Like, I can't stomach a lot of these guys. Matt Jones, another guy. Robert Streb, potentially.
There's some definite names, but it's just like, ugh. Yeah. It's rough. Yeah. Like, you wouldn't be shocked if half of them made it through and maybe even T25 or something, but at the same time, ugh.
Yeah.
All right, since we don't want to be in the 6K range, you mentioned your dart. How about you give me your favorite play 7,400 and below?
I'm going to go with
Chesson Hadley.
The highest rated on my – well, Goosen. I'm going to say Goosen because he's 7,300 and he's the highest rated on my model. So
I like it. I'm going to go with our good boy Stewie Sink, 7,100. That'll be my low point there. Who is your bust of the week?
Oh, Lord. Bust. Man, I mean, it's super easy to say Rory or Spieth. I think those are kind of cop outs. But my bust of the week will be Daniel Berger.
I like that a lot. My cop out of the week would be Brooks Koepka, just because I don't think it's going to happen this week. But my next one, as I will say, is Jason Day. That's just a guy I'm not feeling yet. But hey, if he does it, he does it.
Mm-hmm.
Who's your core this week?
It's most likely going to be Paul Casey and Bryson. It gives a lot of room to kind of go down low sevens and probably back up into eight. So those two are going to be in my core.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same with Casey and Bryce, and then in the 8Ks, sprinkle with some Bubba and Sneds and kind of go that route. Who do you have winning the Travelers? Give me kind of a good one and then like a long shot.
I think this is the year that Justin Thomas wins. I picture him being like a Spieth type of win, you know, kind of like he did, like Spieth did last year, as far as after the U.S. Open, bounce back and won here. Other than that, like a more long shot, I would have to say Grillo.
I like that a lot. My pick to win, and I think you'll enjoy this quite a bit, is Bryson DeChambeau. I think he picks up his second of the year. If I got to go a little longer shot, it's probably not as long as Grillo, but I like Brant Snedeker this week. I think he can sneak it in. So
that's my long shot. Yeah.
I think he's starting to get back to that form where he once was a contender more often than not. So we'll see how that goes. Any words of wisdom as we wrap it up for the people this week?
That's it, man. My brain's fried from playing golf and watching golf all weekend. So
there you go. There's no $4 this week on DraftKings. There's a $5. There's a $5 100 max. There's no $4, and there's a $3 20 max. So that one's going to make some people probably a little ruffle feathers there. So we'll see how that goes. But you know, all the big spenders will have their tournaments, and we'll see how it goes.
Yep.
But everybody, check out Jesse on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. The podcast is at Always Press DFS. I am at BD Entrick. Check out The Sports Degens at thesportsdegens.com and join Slack chat on Wednesday. We'll break down the slate a little more, answer your questions, get all that up and going on a weekly basis. But until next week, this was the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast previewing the Travelers Championship. Catch you guys next time.